Welcome to the Redefining Recruitment Podcast, where we challenge the typical idea of what recruitment is all about and help cultivate a new type of HR thinker. The people we talk to are at the forefront of these thoughts and are delivering on the promise of new ways to engage future talent and leaders. Let's start with our hosts, the leaders and managers of one of the most innovative recruitment solution businesses in Central Europe, made up of Good Call, DataCruits ATS, and the Recruitment Academy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of Redefining Recruitment Podcast. My name is Jose.
I'm Blake. And here we are. We're here with Michal Menchik. Michal is the CEO and the founder of actually quite a lot of companies, many of which it seems are still functioning today, which is an accomplishment in itself. Talked to many startup founders that are founders of many companies, none of which are actually going today. If you've ever ordered online groceries, it's very possible that you receive them from his company, Dodo. Michal's been running companies since about 2011 when he became CEO of Slevin. So if you ever bought anything from a daily deal, Slevomat-style company, Slevin was also a big one. But I'd say his biggest move arguably came in 2017 when he bought a no-name, funny-named company from Mr. Komarek at KKCG, which of course is Dodo. He spent some time in the US, I think, when he was younger, and we're very happy to have him on.
Hi.
So the first question, I think people probably know the most Dodo because you have the cars, it's in the streets and so on. Was it like hiring drivers? Do you have any cool ideas how to lure them into your company?
Well, you know, already in the beginning, when we started, we bought the company, they had like 10 drivers, right? So they had 10 drivers already let's say on the list. And we had to hire more and more. And, you know, the last couple of years were really tough for hiring drivers. So you really have to be creative once you get into the number of hundreds. Today, we actually have something around 1,200 drivers. Wow. So going through these, going through that kind of a number, how many people you have to go through, hire them, and, it's really quite difficult at some point, especially, as I said, before COVID, it was much more tougher. So, I think what we try to a little bit how to lure them in is through the DNA of the company. So I think Dodo has become a little bit of a love brand for many of them. And they really, I think, enjoy that it's not only, every day the same work, because we try to mix them up a little bit. We try to give them sometimes different work and for different companies or our customers. So I think that helps a lot. Actually,
I've got a question here. Yeah. Why did you buy a company with only 10 drivers? What was the value in the company? Now, when I hear that, if you told me 100 drivers, 50 cars, I would get it. Why buy a company with 10 drivers?
Because we saw that. I think there were three things. One thing was they had some technology, but nothing huge. Okay. They had a really nice brand that we liked, and we saw that can be, but mainly
it was Dodo.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. But mainly it was about that there was a kick-ass team of 5 people that we met. We really liked the team, mm-hmm. and all of these guys are still with us after 4 years. So
so it was about recruitment.
Was really, because that was the main asset of the company. So and we had a team that would that just could look at what we want to do and a little bit just take it and run with it.
Yeah. You mentioned COVID, before COVID, after COVID. How exactly did this COVID thing, which is still there, affected maybe not just the numbers of applicants, but maybe retention?
Well, actually, retention has been always pretty good with us. Time to time, when you have this kind of number of people, of course, people come and go. But we never had this kind of huge problem that, people just would, or the drivers would just, want to flock away in big numbers. So that didn't happen. I have to say. Yeah. but before COVID, it was just tougher because the ask for this kind of position, there was a lot of companies like Koshi, Grohlik, all of them were hiring immensely drivers. Yeah. So it started to be just, you know, who pays more actually in the end. So, and we don't want to play this game actually that much. So,
that's strange.
Yeah. Sorry. So, yeah, it's a stupid answer, isn't it? So, that was before COVID, and after COVID, of course, you know, there was a lot of people on the market, just didn't have a job or were, you know, looking for some, part-time job, so we at that point it was much easier to find people and get them on board.
It's amazing now when I think about everything that's all the businesses that have been built on cars and delivery, starting of course with Uber and then moving into food delivery and then to the task delivery. I'm curious. I used Dodo a couple times, but years ago, years meaning like two or three. I used it for a car battery replacement. I couldn't get there because of my schedule. And I used Dodo to actually take my car there, actually to get a new battery and bring it to my house. But because of being part owner in the company, I can kind of do what I want with my time. So it's not such a big deal for me. If I need to take off a half a day, I can and do it. In that case, I couldn't because of client meetings. But have you ever used it, Jose? Dodo? Like for a task or anything?
No, I'm sure you've
used it to get groceries. But I'm curious what... beyond the grocery and the product, classic product delivery from retailers and stuff, how big is the other part of the business?
When we bought the company, of course, that was the main thing. It was 100% of the company, and we changed this because we saw the potential more in B2B.
Definitely.
So today, I would say we're around 5% only. Because we never got to a point that we wanted to push it more because we just didn't have the time to actually work on that. And it's more about marketing then and, you know, getting in the, you know, working with the customers that we already have. So we still do it because, it's still in the DNA, I think, of the company. We like it. Especially this... it's interesting for the careers or for the employee because it's really like, you know, doing some missions. So it's like, you know, every task is always different. Everybody wants everything, you know, something else. So it's always like a mission, and I think people really enjoy that one because I have to say I tried that also for a day, and it was really fun.
Cool. Have you ever had any drivers just not want to do something? Reject and say no, that's nasty, or that I don't know.
In these missions,
yeah,
I don't think so. Actually, I can't remember that we would have something that would. Well, because the point is that like the first thing is that we have a dispatcher, or so you can say someone like on a the frontline person that talks or, you know, or writes with the customer. Mm-hmm. So of course we rejected, I guess, something there.
Sure.
Can't really say now.
Okay, just wondering. When I was asking about my car battery, I thought, like, are they gonna do it? Because they also have to buy the new one. So how's that gonna work? And it was all taken care of. It was amazing.
It's all about trust, basically.
But I understand why. I think if you try to push that, you also have to partly educate the market if you want to make it huge on why it's valuable and how to use it. And anytime you have a business where you have to educate the market on why you're valuable, it's an uphill battle. And it's much easier if you already take a business that exists but doesn't have enough bandwidth or total numbers and just kind of hop on and do it better, do it differently. I completely understand.
It was just like we calculated the investment we would have to do, you know. It was about also doing like a mobile app that we wanted to do. We actually already 4 years ago, or like maybe on the start, the vision was to really do it more like Glovo. I don't know if you guys know that one. It's a Spanish startup that is doing actually they deliver like everything and in the end the real business is with the B2Bs.
Your company, WeSharp Ventures, are backing also not only Dodo, but other three major brands, Riverbit, Idastry, and What else? Inval?
Yeah, Inval. Yeah.
Can you say more about, like, because...
We actually exited Riverbit I think this year, yeah. We exited the Riverbit this year. And we, because White History was with it, and so White History is a really interesting startup, I have to say. They're like super,
can you
super
tell
cool.
More about it?
Yeah, they it's a startup that looks at the stock of or dead stock of a company. Let's say for instance, I don't know, some retailer like Tesco or someone, mm-hmm. And they look at the stock and they redistribute the stock based on. The sales. So if there is some dead stock in, you know, Prague, it can be easily sold in Brno. Mm-hmm. So we just show them how to redistribute, and they basically sell off the stock without, you know, going into discounts or just writing it off.
Okay.
So it's like,
and Brno people are okay with getting Prague leftovers. Do they know about
it? It's also the other way around, right? So. No, so it's really interesting data business, we have high hopes for that one actually.
So it's kind of like analytics behind it. So I guess as you mentioned, like data company, a lot of IT guys.
Yeah.
Do you feel that you can hire better people now after COVID?
Like in IT, yeah.
In IT, yeah.
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure. I don't think so actually, because. I don't have the feeling that the IT sector had some like huge hit. Of course, there's a lot of startups, you know, in travel or in, you know, there's a lot of companies that got the hit. But still, you know, these people, they don't have a problem to get a job.
I've been thinking about this as well and talked to a number of companies. And I have the same feeling. The big change that I saw was that some of the Ichaji, so the people that are on like their own, you know, it's a, some of those guys started saying, "Okay, I'll take a full time job."
Yeah.
And that but that happened in like April, May.
Yeah.
And since then, I've been waiting, for all the developers to start calling me and calling us and calling our IT recruitment division. It hasn't happened. The only thing that I've noticed is that, you know, the crazy salaries, you know, Silicon Valley salaries are not as much. What I would call a problem.
I just wanted to say that actually also that we really see now that there, you know, there isn't this kind of, because it was just getting crazy, right? With the salaries, they were going up, and we now see that this has, you know, at least stopped somewhere, and also it's, I don't see that kind of, you know, demand for. You know, for other benefits that they always wanted, like, you know, well, of course, home office is something that's a little bit different. but you know, usually they also wanted like other, you know, perks and the companies went the extra mile to give them, you know, I don't know, free food or you name it, right?
Yeah.
So now I see that has also a little bit stopped, and that people more maybe value their job.
There's also something that I've noticed, which is. 12 pre-COVID, if somebody's on 100, a good developer, and you spoke with them, they'd say, "Look, if you pay me 120, I'll go." There's less people like that now, because I think they recognize there is a value to stability in this company. I've been here for 2 years. They know me. They like me. I'm doing well.
Yeah.
For 20, maybe for 50,000, they would go still, but it was also very instable, that the loyalty labor market, and it's definitely more stable now. Which, once again, going back to your question, Jose, and to your answer, I would agree that it doesn't mean that it's easier to find people, but you know, you don't have to kind of. Switching to check. You have to kind of overpay, but you still need to pay well for the good ones.
Plus, as you mentioned, like the HR and so on, we just discussed this the day before yesterday in Tieto in Ostrava. They are also like hiring, they have new projects, they are hiring like 40 Java developers and so on. So, huge numbers. Mm. And the thing with HR and so on is it's mostly because of the job safety.
Right.
Suddenly, the job safety is, I think, based on jobs.cz, number 4.
Right.
Before it wasn't even there. It was money and so on.
People were
leaving the company even without having a next job.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
It's not mostly the case.
Absolutely.
And people are more like rather risking.
Yeah.
Probation period, definitely. Security is. So the security is suddenly.
Do you guys, for the drivers, are they on contracts? Or are they on? Are they external employees? How does that work?
We have it mixed. It's a different setup. Some of them are employees. Some of them are contractors. Some of them are just part-time, you know, workers doing.
And that's based. But do you have some kind of numbers that you would like to have as employees? And the rest are not, or is that based on them?
Well, you know, it's a pool of people that we try to, you know. It depends also. It also depends where exactly, you know, where or for which company they work for. Like because for our customers, so sometimes we just, you know, we just have to have employees and we want to have employees.
Gotcha.
Sometimes we just want to have more contractors.
Yeah.
So it's a mix.
Okay. I saw this Hotovky Košík during COVID. What was that all about?
Well, it was the COVID started, and we got some information that basically they might close all the restaurants, and that Prague was thinking, or like the city of Prague was thinking of how to, you know, help the elderly people and to get the food to them. So we talked with Tomáš Hrábek from Košík, and we tried just to think of a project how to, you know, be there if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So over the weekend, actually, we hacked this up. It was a really quick one. On Friday, we just had the idea, and basically, I think Tuesday or Wednesday, we were launching. So it was a really, really quick couple of day project, it was really good because we saw that the demand was really there at that time, and I think, you know, we definitely did not make money on this project.
Okay.
It was the food sold was like for 69 crowns, so that was just like it was really and really good food actually, and still for a price point that was just unbelievable from my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So and with delivery for I don't know, it was like maybe 25 crowns or something. So really, yeah.
Wow. Do you know the numbers?
We were doing like in the top days, you know, in the first 4 or 5 weeks, we were doing a couple of thousand portions a day. So
really,
it was quite a number.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah. I like seeing companies that actually step up and help out. I was impressed in general with how Czech Republic responded to it.
Yeah.
But I'm even more impressed when companies and entrepreneurs step up and do something on their own, not to make money, but to do something great. Yes, of course, there's probably decent PR.
Sure.
I know that, but whether people like it or not, there's decent PR, but you're also doing something good for people who need it. That's great.
Yeah. Well, actually, we also started the platform Do Dobrovolníka at that time. So that was like we wanted to connect people that wanted to really help.
Mm-hmm.
And with, let's say, nonprofits or someone that really just needed the help of people, or, you know, or we just pitched in a couple of, you know, cars and careers. We got also a good cooperation there with Škoda Auto and Škoda Regilab, so they gave us some cars for these people, and we helped. We basically gave these cars to some people that just want to help for free.
Volunteers.
Yeah. So that was also a really nice project, and we just really exactly as I said, I really saw that just the whole nation just wanted to, you know, work together and help. So
good for you.
Yeah.
You mentioned home office for IT people. Maybe today is the other way around. Like, our people will be actually asking for office home office.
A number of them. Yeah. When do we come? Do we have to go home?
How did you hire people during the first COVID phase? Are you requiring at the interview to see the candidates face to face, or are you able to hire actually even without seeing people face to face, purely digital?
No, well, the funny story here is that when we were supposed to launch Dodo in Hungary in May,
mm-hmm.
And we were like, you know, okay, so what are we going to do now? It's like we can't get there. It was a complete lockdown. And we actually managed. We just we really put in the we just threw a Zoom calls.
Really.
We just hired a the country manager through a interview just through a Zoom call. It was a crazy experience, I have to say. Great guy, and
is he still there?
Yeah,
still
going? He really okay. he really paid off, and so we hired him through this, and he did the rest. Actually, of course, you know, my colleagues with him are on the line all the time to help him out, like externally. And I think just for the launch, we were able, like sometimes in May when finally it got a little bit better, so we got to, you know, we got to send like three people there with COVID tests that, you know, they could just go there and, you know, see the launch. So that helped. But else, everything was on him, and it was just like externally. So,
So have you ever met him face to face?
I personally did not.
You still haven't?
No. I personally did not. I wanted to go to Budapest a couple of times, but always like it got some always got some problems. So no, but my Richard, who's running our expansion, so he has been there many times. So he's been helping.
It just goes to show, Jose and I, we had our last one was with L'Oreal, and Hanna Stamlakova had a great story, also ex Synergy, by the way. great story about hiring a manager for a team that nobody had ever met. This lady, she was ex L'Oreal from before. They hired her without ever meeting her. They did Zoom calls. Mm. She took over a whole team. Not hired, but took over a team, also totally digital. So nobody's ever met this lady face-to-face. The team has never met her face-to-face. And she did wonderful. She did wonderfully. I mean, everybody's really happy with her. Her results are great. The team loves her. It just shows that, okay, screens are great. They're wonderful. I've always said you can't replace human interaction. But it seems that for definitely some parts of recruitment, you can. Mm. You can do it successfully. This is why I always ask people when they say, "Yeah, we hired digitally." No, but I always ask that follow up question: are the people still there? How did it go? Because there's some things that you don't feel on a screen that you don't sense. Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. Some of the unconscious bias could be not relevant there, but others pop up.
I'm pretty sure that like for IT positions, we do also we did also some Zoom calls and just, you know, having it online. So we did that, but you can definitely onboard them. I think that works, but in the end, I think there's always that personal touch is needed at some point at least. But I'm just more to like a face to face guy.
Me too. Me too.
As I'm visiting companies, it's still some companies, they really still require face-to-face interaction before actually the person is hired. But there are like many success stories, like you already mentioned, like one company, IT company, just mentioned to me that they were hiring a cloud engineer. They sent him a laptop, everything. So they were like onboarding him into
how they sent him the laptop? I don't know.
Most probably. And the other guys at the team said, like, we haven't seen him yet, but he's the best cloud engineer like ever. Like,
really?
If this continues, this perfect. Yeah, so, but of course, it's probably, you know, IT roles, some other roles, it might be different. So,
Well, actually, the funny thing with the home offices is that, you know, when the lockdown was, I think the RIT team was, you know, doing even better work than when they were in the office.
Wow.
Really, really, I think so. They, of course, it was like this national crisis. So they had this kind of, you know, we need to help. And, you know, all the projects we were doing at that time were for helping. So they were like, okay, we're just going to go through night, day, weekend, just to get it done. So, you know, they did like an amazing job in that. And they you know, really showed that, you know, their heart is in the right place and they just want to help. But also, you know, even afterwards, this little bit went down and, you know, it was starting to get normal. I think still the team really, really, they found a way how to, like, get the hours in and work even better at home. That they just, for some reason, I think these people can, you know, they just really like their, I guess, their home office in a way, and they just usually also put in even more hours, actually.
It's great, but I'm glad you mentioned the kind of, you know, that beginning we need to save the world mentality. Because I've talked to a lot of CEOs over the last 6 months, and I've had many of them tell me that productivity went up at the beginning of COVID.
Yeah.
And I started kind of, you know, being an ambassador of this as well and saying, guys, home office is amazing. Look at this. All these companies' productivity went up. And I still think it's a wonderful thing. But many of those companies now are saying after 6 months, productivity is not up anymore, which goes back to my theory, which is if you tried this last October 2019, just as a test, if you walked into the company and said, 1st of October, hey, guys, I want everyone to go home. Let's just try it. Do you think productivity would go up? I don't.
No.
I really don't. No. I think it was this euphoria that, you know, the world is ending.
Yeah.
Our company's going to go down. The nation will be crushed by this virus. We got to fight back. And I think everyone went and they put in the hours.
Yeah.
And I applaud them for it. I think it's wonderful. But I'm still not convinced that human nature allows most people, not everyone, I think there's some exceptions, but I think human nature, we're social animals. And from time to time, that human-to-human interaction helps us kind of keep going rather than just screens. I do respect that. I've worked with a lot of developers who say, I need to just get into my zone and I can do that best at home. So, you know, I'll do three or 4 days a week at home and I'll do it. And, you know, managers say, okay, but 1 day a week, please.
This might be also part of their life when they are single, maybe, and so on, without kids.
Correct.
Even like ID guys, they have kids as well, right? So suddenly maybe they will be asking for the office.
Yeah, I'm definitely not I was never a huge fan of like permanent home office. So, you know, when developers came to us and they said, well, I need, you know, I want to guarantee that I can have 3 days home office. No, sorry. Like, this is, I'm not a fan of that, because I really believe that even the small interactions, you know, at the coffee machine or, you know, just somewhere on the hallway, they really, you know, do a lot. And so
if you want to build a love brand, but also if you've got people that you want to be sure that they're kind of constantly developing, those little interactions could be at the coffee machine. I see with our software is with Datacruit, they're literally at the coffee machine and they're talking about stuff, right?
Yeah.
And you've got people who have different, you know, skill sets and junior and senior, and whether they know it or not, they're learning and they're developing and they're connecting, and you do not get that sitting in, you know, a room alone for 5 days. So totally get it.
There are some companies also discussing like having those people working at home, like, you know, the surveillance software now, the managers and so on, they want, especially at some companies, some software where they can actually see the screenshot if they are working, like the productivity and so on. Now it's really growing again, of
really,
course.
And
I'm not a big fan of that.
No, I think people in our office and in all business I've been around, they don't work 8 hours, 9 hours a day, like nonstop.
Yeah, of course not.
They surf social, they look at news, and that's completely fine with me.
Yeah.
As long as they kind of get their work done and they put in the hours needed to get that work done. But
the idea was that it's not only that manager is checking up on the subordinates, but also you can check other colleague if he's sitting behind a computer or not, just by having the picture, for example.
Really?
Which kind of like simulates the office, right? Because I can also see you if you are there or not.
True.
If you are kind of working or not.
True.
So this is kind of simulating this. You are not in your like home bubble.
Actually, I had it. I had it 7 years ago. I had software like that because we had some external people in Philippines that were doing customer service for us. And this was in a different startup of mine. And we just wanted to be sure that the hours put in were real hours. And she agreed to it. And we got screenshots every hour for the hours that she was working. And yes, you know, I saw stuff where she's chatting with her mother. Because I would look at it from time to time. Not very often, I have to say. And in the end, it was okay. But I always felt really weird looking at that. I felt like I was either stalking or I shouldn't be seeing the stuff. Even though, okay, she was our employee and we were paying her every month. But it felt weird.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's a trust thing, right? Because, of course, it's hard in some positions to have always the trust. And, you know, we learned this the hard way with the drivers. with the trusting, but you know, with a back office employee or you know RIT employee, yeah, I'm not sure I would go the way that you know you want to just check up on them always, and I think then they lose the trust also to you. It's like it's a two-way street.
Like this particular case I was mentioning, it was also like UK-based company having Indian employees,
right.
So remote workers, never seen them probably, and so on.
Yeah,
kind of like almost maybe / external employees.
Yeah.
So you are kind of signing that you will be under surveillance.
Yeah.
That you are proceeding with, they have some kind of procedure to do the thing. So,
but you almost have that with some, I don't know if you guys do it, but I worked with companies that had, for their drivers, where they had the box that told them where the driver was, how fast they were driving.
Of course.
All these details.
Yeah, this is the must.
For safety and security reasons.
Well, this is a must. We have that. We need that also for just planning, right? So for just for the planning, for the purpose of planning and knowing where the drivers are is essential. So so all our cars have GPSs and everything. But more of a the trust issue that we, or in the beginning that we were maybe a little bit naive was with money, because of course all of the drivers come they work with money at some point and we just didn't have the processes right, and so we got they stole us a lot
really
of money.
Before
we got like all the processes right, I think we lost like 1.2 million checks.
Jesus, really?
Yeah.
How? Okay, but because they were dealing with cash to pay for things, and then
All right. So and of course you have bad people, and you know, and then they get into some kind of you know their own crisis, financial crisis.
Yeah.
So time to time they were just like, okay, I need to solve my crisis, and I'll just steal this money.
Now they have the dollar car at their cottage.
Exactly.
By the way, but you can see with the GPS is people at Česká spořitelna employees, probably not all of them, but those using car for work and so on, they have also GPS in their cars.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely normal. So maybe with the COVID, you know, the boundaries are pushed. Mm. Suddenly we have surveillance software in our computers, and it will be a status quo.
Well, I've got Eroshka app, which is basically also, I mean, I know everybody else is, all the other apps are following me too, but I've given this one kind of, you know, clear consent. Yes, please follow me, and please follow everybody else around me. I still somehow feel it's for a good cause, it's for a societal purpose and health purpose, and my plan is that when this is over, whenever that may be, I'll delete the app.
Mm. Yeah, I have that also. Yeah,
yeah, I think it's the right thing.
When they ask you in the subway, do you have Eroshka? Do you have the mask? You say, yes, I have Eroshka.
Eroshka, okay. I can put this phone in front of my face. It'll be fine. How do you engage drivers? How do you, because they're not office employees, it's different. How do you make sure that they actually feel part of your
drivers meetup?
Do you have like
it's a
drivers all hands meeting or something?
Actually we do, it's teams. Okay. It's we have just a lot of teams, so you have a structure where you have like managers that have underneath them, let's say, another 3-4 teams. These teams have another, like, you know, manager, and so it's all in the end, it's really like teamwork and working with them individually.
But that, I mean, that of course relies on, you know, the your top managers to be wonderful and not Michal Menchik, right? So and there's definitely people that are there because they say, I think our company, therefore our CEO, is in the right direction, it's inspirational, and I like what I'm doing. But how do you get your message and kind of what you feel is right, and how do you make sure that gets down to, you know, random Franta who's delivering me my Rohlík or Košík groceries?
I think this is one of the areas that we actually we were not doing a good job. I think that we could have done much better. So we have now a couple of projects that we're now rolling out. If I could say, like a simple email link, to them, helps a lot. So this is something that we're now working on to do a better job. Of course, each driver has our app, so this is also a way how we can communicate with him.
Okay.
Through the app, where he gets basically all the deliveries, and he sees, you know, what can be done. So when there are some, you know, I don't know, risk problems or something. So we can also just push him some info to the app. But this kind of interactions and to, you know, to sell where we are going, yeah, I think that that wasn't done properly. So
my wife works in Moneta Bank, mm-hmm. and they have lunch with the CEO, mm-hmm. because in most banks it's pretty big hierarchy.
Sure.
And they do a lunch around Tomáš Burný where they can ask questions and stuff. When I was kind of running in a managerial perspective, a larger part of Good Call, there was also probably two or three levels down to some of the first talent sources we had. And I would have lunch once every week, I think on Monday or something, I would take one of the new sources for lunch. Just to find out, like, how's it going? Anything you see? Any feedback that you want to give me? Not to go around your leaders or anything, but I'm just curious, and to also kind of inject some of what we were trying to do. Have you ever thought about that?
What we actually do for some time now, I think we started like last year. We do all hands meetings, which is not only the office but also these managers, regional managers. So all the regional managers, even from Slovakia, or, you know, there. Of course, now it's a little bit different, so it's we also have it online. Mm-hmm. But most of them want to come in, and they want to really get the feeling from inside. And we have all hands meeting where we show, you know, what's happened, where we're going, and even for the regional managers, which is quite important because that's a lot of people. It's even you know. I don't know, it's going to be today 30 to 40 people, I would say. On this level, and we also actually take these people on team buildings. Mm-hmm. So it's also another way how to, you know, push in the DNA of the company. Cool. And a new thing that we started this year was breakfasts for the newcomers.
Yeah.
So basically, the newcomers have breakfast with the board. So all of us, all six people from the board, have breakfast with each month with the new ones that came in, which is also actually quite cool. Even though the newcomers are still a little bit, like, you know, shy and they don't want to really ask much questions, but still, it's a good interaction because at least, you know, they know who they're working for. We know who's working for us, and it's it got a little bit too impersonal at some point, and we just really wanted to know the people, like all, because, you know, someone, of course, HR knows everybody, but, you know, some manager from IT doesn't know, of course, the person from finance, or I don't know, so.
We do a couple times a year. We did the town hall, which we just did last week. Exactly. Last week?
Last week.
Yeah.
Those are good.
Yeah.
I like those.
Yeah.
Those are good. We've got a question box. Always some fun questions in there.
Yeah, the question box is something that I think helps because for some reason, you know, I think Czechs and Slovaks, they just don't want the interaction. They don't. Yeah, they're really shy to ask. So the only way is anonymous.
Yeah. But there's a great question, right? Yours? How many shirts do you have?
How many shirts do you
have? Because Jose always wears these black shirts. And I asked him actually a month or two before, how many shirts do you have? You've got to have enough, right? To be able to go through a week or two if you need or travel. And you had 28 black shirts. When I've told this to people, I mentioned to my wife the other day, why? And I said, it's that, you know, I said, think about how long you and or, I mean, mostly you, of course, not true, spend in the evening, in the morning, choosing what you're going to wear.
Yeah.
Imagine if you didn't have to spend your brain power. Yeah. Right? They say the brain
Steve
is a muscle.
Style.
Yeah. Steve Jobs, exactly. They say the brain is a muscle and it can get fatigued like any other. So you're wasting valuable, you know, muscle time of your brain on deciding whether I'm going to wear this shirt or that shirt, these pants, what shoes. Yeah. And there's Jose wearing, you know, what am I going to wear today? This black shirt or that black shirt?
Which is exactly a question because they are different, you know. They have different texture and so on. So, for me, it's not a question. For you, you see just the black shirt.
Yeah, but you've actually thought about which one.
It suddenly become like a brand, you know. So then you need to stick with it.
If you came in a blue T-shirt, I would lose my mind. I would tell the Jose, fake Jose, to get out of here. Send in the real one.
All right, so the final question.
Yeah, go on.
What do you do, what is really like unique in terms of your recruitment? We know that there is one thing you already mentioned before the podcast. So what is it that you do?
Yeah, the unique thing that we came up with also this year, and I think it's great. I had this experience actually this week for this year for the first time. So everybody from our office or the back office people, IT guys, and actually it was a little bit the inspiration was with our IT guys because they started to go into the operations and try out the operations themselves because the manager Ondra Ser, he wanted to, you know, experience some of the processes, so he just went in and, you know, really tried to do the job. So yeah, it was so we just said, okay, let's do it like a project that everybody without, you know, any excuses, at least once a year goes out into operations for, you know, half a day, and they try out to, you know, really drive a car, go use the app, really deliver. So yeah, so this week I was doing a Tesco driver. Okay. So I was driving the biggest, and they gave me the biggest car. Of course, they just wanted to, you know, have fun with me a little bit, so they gave me the biggest car, the Ducato, yeah. And I was driving around Prague and delivering.
Good for you.
And of course it's, you know, because everybody has a unique look at the, you know, you have your job and you have, you know, you somehow see the company, right? But if you change the positions a little bit and go into and really try it yourself, you really see into the process, and you know, you have a complete different look at the job, and there's a lot of value, I think, in that you can take back. And even I did, even though I know this job, I would say, a lot, but still, there was some take from that for me this week. And again, it helped me a little bit to process some new tasks from that.
Yeah. I think these are great. In Good Call, also, I think once or twice a year, we would do it where sources and recruiters would switch roles and other people would just see what it's like to,
exactly,
do the other thing. When you and I worked in the same company, a couple of years apart, though, in Synergy, we were hiring Carrefour hypermarket directors. Mm. And the rule there was that all hypermarket directors had to go through 1 year of doing everything except managing a hypermarket. Mm-hmm. They got the salary of a hypermarket director, but they needed to learn what it was like to do everything. And amazingly, I thought it was great, and I would have, as I was telling you guys before, I would have gladly taken on a position like that. But we actually had candidates who said, no, I won't do it. I want the big role and the title from day one, even though the salary was from day one for the entire year.
Someone can see me there.
Yeah, they might see me, you know, putting the products on the shelf or the cashier work or something, and they didn't want to go for. I think it's so valuable.
It is, because you really see what the job is, right? You see what the whole process is. So yeah, definitely, I think it's a great experience, and I'm really, really interested to see how the others from our team will, you know, how will they manage with this? Because of course, not everybody can drive also, so they have to a little bit. But we also have careers that go to just public transport, so we also do that still. Yeah. But it's good. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see, to get the feedback, and I think it's going to be very valuable for both sides.
Good stuff.
Perfect. Thanks very much, Michal.
Thanks.
Good,
guys. Thanks.
The Redefining Recruitment Podcast was brought to you by the people who believe in waking up the recruitment industry and are living that life each day at DataCrude ATS, Recruitment Academy, and the recruitment and talent sourcing powerhouse, Good Call.